Dr. Jay Kaufman, who joined the McGill University Epidemiology Department as a professor and a Canada Research Chair in Health Disparities in 2009. Dr. Kaufman's work focuses mainly on social epidemiology, analytic epidemiology, causal inference, and on a variety of health outcomes. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Kaufman, who will be talking about studies of social policy at McGill in the 21st century in the service of a worthy cause.
Thank you. Okay, thanks. The title, of course, has a little bit of a pun in it, in the sense that when I say that we're in the service of a worthy cause, I mean it both in the sense that we are motivated by pursuit of a better society and the worthy cause in the ideological sense, but also the worthy cause in the sense of the distinction between causation and association. So having come to McGill relatively recently, unlike Dr. Kramer, I can't speak personally about the long history here, but I gather that there was not a lot of social epidemiology here for most of the 20th century period of McGill's history as a department, but that it really blossomed after the arrival of Rebecca Fuhrer as chair. And having come from the Whitehall Group in London with Michael Marmot, that she had some kind of an idea that this was an area of growth that McGill could really specialize in and be very productive in. And so she engaged in the hiring of a number of new faculty in this area. The only person I have here pictured that I don't think she was involved in hiring is Gilles Paradis, who is here forever, I guess. I think maybe with the exception of the last two hires shown here, I think she was instrumental in bringing everybody else here in this group. Now, some of the people pictured here are no longer at McGill. They came and then went on to other things, but we're still involved in collaborations we're still colleagues and still producing things jointly. And this group has a number of other interesting aspects to it. One of the visions that Dr. Fuhrer had was extending the expertise of the group across other disciplines. So we have a hire here who shared with sociology and another hire who shared with economics as a way of increasing the breadth of expertise within the group, both methodologic expertise and substantive expertise, and pursuing the interdisciplinary aspect of research in social epidemiology and social policy for health outcomes by supplying those needed interdisciplinary elements. So the critical features of this kind of a research program are the necessity for both epidemiologic theory, because we're studying populations, and also substantive knowledge, sociological theory, understanding about how populations are organized and how the social factors that are the determinants of disease are distributed and the processes by which people come upon things like education and income, which require substantive expertise in sociology and economics and so forth. And then the critical distinction that I think McGill leads the way in is this distinction between association and causation. Much of the literature in social factors in health, social determinants in health, is organized around showing that low education is associated with bad health outcomes, or low income is associated with bad health outcomes. But those are not policy-relevant discoveries, because the fact that they're associated doesn't really tell you what to do about them. So when you actually study how changing somebody's social position, how changing somebody's access to education or income changes a health outcome, then you really have a piece of information that can be given to a policymaker that has some implications, some new scientific knowledge that's consequential for improving society. Then, of course, there's all kinds of interesting questions that arise with modeling and adjustment, questions about how we do epidemiologic adjustment in order to get a causal estimate, generalizing from our study results to whole populations that we want to make policies for, and then the transmission of that knowledge to policymakers so they can actually modify or develop policies so that they can have the desired health improvements. So the distinction between association and causation that I've stressed and that I think is such an important aspect of our scientific ideology here in this McGill group is just the difference between the outcome given that you find people at a particular exposure state, versus what we really want to know, which is the outcome given that we set people, we assign people, we force people to a particular exposure state. If we do studies that we find some people have low education or low income and they have bad health outcomes, we don't really know how they got to that exposure level. And we can't infer then that if we had some program that encouraged them to get more education or more income that we would necessarily change that. Now, we have a tradition in epidemiology and the social sciences of adjusting for things. Like in this diagram here, I have this variable Z. And it's the case, because of the way that Z is positioned here between X and Y, that if I observe that X and Y are correlated, that doesn't really tell me what would happen if I changed X, if I manipulated, if I had some policy that affected people's X levels. But if I condition on Z, then I can know that. And so this is a strategy that epidemiology has taken for decades, maybe for centuries, to try to deal with this problem. But it does require that you know what those Zs are and that you measure them. So this is a big limitation. So here's an example. I have along the vertical axis here the outcome, the bad outcome, which is cavities. And along the exposure axis here, the horizontal axis, I have hours of watching television. And I can do a regression model here on these points and get a slope there, which says that as I increase the amount of television watching in the data set, that is, I move in the data set to increasing values of television watching, I find a higher and higher number on average of cavities. This tells me as I move through the data set that I will find more cavities at higher levels of exposure. Does it tell me that as I force people to watch more TV that they will develop more cavities as a result? Not necessarily. Now, if I leave the data exactly the same and I just change the axes, now I have caries still as the outcome, and now my exposure is grams of refined sugar. And now in the data set, I estimate exactly the same parameter. So statistically, in terms of what a statistical model is going to do on this data set, it's exactly the same number. But now many of you would assign a causal interpretation to this, that it's not only as I move through the data set that I find higher values of exposure associated with higher values of outcome, but that you would actually believe that that moving people, as opposed to moving among data points, that actually moving people to higher levels of refined sugar consumption would increase their levels of cavities. So it's not a statistical problem, the distinction between these two charts. I'm going back and forth here. This is my animation for the talk here. I can go back and forth between these two, and you see that the data doesn't change. And yet, this is an association that you would never take to be causal, and this is an association that you would take to be causal. And that's only because you know something about the subject matter. You know something about caries and where they come from. And so you know that in the first case, if I adjusted for some measure of socioeconomic development in societies, if I, you know, had some measure of per capita income or technological level of the society, that my first estimate after adjustment would become null, and my second estimate would not. And you know that because you know something about what the important Zs are in that diagram that I showed you earlier. So this strategy is going to work of finding this causal effect of what would actually happen if we intervened. This is going to work when we already know the answer, when we already know the structure. If we can draw out that picture and we know what the Zs are, then we can rely on that strategy to adjust. But if we already knew those things, then we wouldn't really have to do the study, would we? So this is a very limited strategy because it requires you already know what all those confounders are. So this leads us to a number of other strategies for investigating the social policy effects on disease that rely on other kinds of study designs. We can't often randomize people, although if we can randomize people, we certainly take advantage of that design. But other natural experiments or other forms of randomization that occur naturally or by chance as policies are being implemented that allow us to get the answer to the question about what would happen if we do something as opposed to just observing that people are exposed or unexposed. This research program is popular at many other schools. We're not the only group that has a social epidemiology unit, and so there's a huge growth in the publication in this area. But I do think McGill is special in this way of focusing on the evaluation of policies and things that policymakers could actually do as opposed to just reporting on observed associations. So I think that this is a kind of a unique characteristic of McGill's program in speaking of this entire group of people and the way that we operate, that we have this kind of a focus that I don't really see any other department having such a similar mindset about this kind of an emphasis. So that we understand this distinction between association and causation with respect to social epidemiology, and we seek study designs that can identify causal effects that have direct policy implications. And I just have example articles that exemplify these different statements. We also have a great deal of productivity around issues of scale and measurements, that there's a great tendency in social epidemiology and epidemiology in general to report everything on the relative scale. And there are a number of researchers here who really focus on this distinction of scale when you look at absolute scale versus relative scale effects or ways of measuring inequalities, and get very, very different impressions about what the surveillance tells us and what the causal effects are across those scales. And that's a rather unique aspect of our program as well. We have a big emphasis on considering implications of alternate models and how it would change our results if we modeled it one way versus another way. And that's, to some extent, an advantage associated with the fact that we have this combined department of epidemiology and biostatistics within the same department. So we have this fluid conversation that always goes on and allows us to consider the modeling maybe in more detail than other units. And we're big on sensitivity analyses. We're thinking about our particular way that we model the results and what would have happened if we had decided to do it a different way, and how sensitive, how robust our results to alternate ways that the model could have been specified. We evaluate real-world policies in the Canadian context, thinking about the ways that the policies are enacted and the ways that they've changed the distribution of disease by affecting social characteristics like income and education. But we also have a great deal of work around the rest of the world. The Mach Equity program that Ari Nandi leads, for example, at the Institute for Health and Social Policy, has a mission of evaluating policy impacts on maternal and child health around the world. We have a great deal of productivity in that area. We produce a lot of descriptive work, which is not etiologic at all. So it's not at all about trying to distinguish between associations and etiology, but rather just trying to describe the distribution of disease in the population, which groups suffer from more or less of the burden of diseases, and what's the extent of inequality for various outcomes in various places according to various kinds of groupings. So we have a great deal of productivity in this area, but also a great deal of productivity around etiologic research that looks at the specific mechanisms by which these inequalities arise. So it's a confluence of a number of different unique characteristics of McGill's department that we have this, it seems to me, very uniquely strong program in this area. There's this very strong causal inference group, which is interdisciplinary and involves people from epidemiology and biostatistics, but also from other departments around the university. So we're very lucky to have that here, and it has a big influence on our social epi group. We have a strong health policy group and health surveillance group. You've heard some talks earlier today about from that group. We have strong subject matter expertise, both because of the interdisciplinary recruitment into our department of a sociologist and an economist, but also because we're on a campus that has a strong social science departments and humanities departments, and so we have access to those people. We have great access to population data through ENSPQ and other aspects of the fact that, and RAMQ, that we have a unified medical system and population monitoring through other agencies. And so all of these things create a greater than multiplicative interaction so that we end up with this group around social factors and health that seems to me uniquely productive and uniquely well-positioned in this century to succeed. Thank you.